The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your
settles
soul.
Your soul. Yes, it does.
Amen.
What happened to the music?
I was pulling it down with my left hand. It slipped, and I pulled it down too quick. So,
with your left hand?
With my left hand. I'm not left-handed. I'm right-handed. So.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is Terry Raposa. This is Jefferson State of Mind, broadcasting live from downtown Reading at KCNR Studios, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, which apparently isn't working right now. So, we're going to do the best we can with FM and streaming live. So you can go to your computer and stream this live, and if you have friends that want to hear this program, which I'm sure most of them will, we have a very important guest here, and she brought her husband. Also, we have Liam, who is our trusted producer.
Good morning. How are you, buddy? I'm hanging out.
Yeah, you look bright-eyed and bushy-tailed today, more awake than normal.
I took yesterday as a rest day and did nothing for the first time in like 3 months. I got a nap in, and I'm feeling like a lot more alive than I have the last couple of Sundays. So,
we are without Wynn Carpenter today. He is on assignment, I think. I think he's somewhere in Tonopah, Nevada. He was mumbling something about really good moonshine. I'm not really sure what happened to him, but he's not here today. Actually, I'm sure what happened to him, but he's fun to tease. So I'm here with Patrick Jones, who is the chairman of the board of supervisors in Shasta County, and his beautiful wife, Lori. And we are going to talk about what is going on in Shasta County and what some of the things are that are coming up and some of the things that Patrick has in mind to lead us in this county. So, my friend, it's your party. Roll it.
Hey, good morning, Terry. Thanks for having me on, as always. And sorry Wynn wasn't here today, but we'll make it through. Yeah, no, it's an exciting time right now. Lots of change. We, as we heard from our last program, Supervisor Cry was on, and he did have our new CEO, David Rickert, and so we now have a permanent CEO, and I'm excited about that. This guy's got a wealth of knowledge. He's got a good background in finances, and so I think that's going to come in really handy for Shasta County, so I'm excited about that. And we do have next Tuesday our budget hearing that'll start at 1 o'clock promptly, and that's going to set the tone for the whole next fiscal cycle. And so I'm sure we're going to be going department by department, taking a look at the finances of each department. And one of the high priorities for me, and I know it is for this board, it was for the last board, and I think it is for this board, is start construction on the new jail. And so we're going to be looking at that budget pretty hard to see if there's any way that we can move forward with some financing to get that done. We do have around $20 million saved up already that can be used for that, and then we're going to need to finance the rest. Now, it's a little bit unknown what amount that we're going to need financing. It's a variety of different costs for the new facility have been thrown out there, some of which I think are highly inflated. I think a new jail right now will cost anywhere from $50 to $80 million, not the 100 or the 125 that has been said in the past. That's just my take on it. And so with $20 million already saved, we're going to need some money and the ability to finance. And that's not always easy given the uncertainty of what the economy might look like in a year or two from now. But for me, that's going to be a top priority as we move through the budget cycle starting 1 o'clock on Tuesday. And then, of course, the meeting starts next Tuesday at 9 o'clock sharp, and we do have our Employee of the Month, and then we will get right into open comment time. It's not a huge agenda because we have the budget hearings later in the day, and everyone will have 3 minutes to speak, as always, which is your right to do so, and we do want to hear from people. There was an incident, as everyone knows, this whole last week has been talked about, the incident of the N-word that was spoken on last Tuesday's meeting. And so there has been a lot of talk. A lot of groups have been weighing in, a lot of past and current elected officials weighing in on the use of that word in an open meeting. And so that's kind of, unfortunately, taken center stage this last week. For me, I would have rather been talking about the budget.
Yeah.
And that's a $658 million budget, and to me that is a big deal. But the word that was used at the last meeting, and it is an evil, it is a very evil word and a bad word, and it shouldn't be allowed in a board meeting, but it is allowed. And that's the difference, and I will be speaking to it at and slightly before public start, public comment start next meeting. I will be speaking and addressing that, and it is important to remember that a person's constitutional rights, specifically with the First Amendment, what those are, and what can a person say in an open meeting and what they can't. And over the last 20 years, and really even further than that, we there's laws going back a long time about what can be and what can't be said. And this word that was spoken last Tuesday created quite a stir. And as evil of a word as it is, and in the manner that it was said, it has First Amendment protection. And if I was to stop that speaker from speaking, it would have been a violation of his First Amendment rights. And so the public needs to be aware of that we can certainly criticize him after that, after the 3 minutes, and several supervisors did. But as far as me being chair and allowing a person to speak using particular words, unfortunately, they are protected. And, you know, I wish people wouldn't say the N-word or the F-word or any of the other foul language or hand gestures that go on. But unfortunately, the court cases have allowed great latitude with First Amendment speech. And it even goes so far to say that even if the vast majority of the citizens disapprove of the language, it's typically allowed under the First Amendment. And so the public needs to be aware of that. I have a job to do as chair. I need to keep that meeting moving and control of the meeting and allow people to speak. It's very important that people have their 3 minutes uninterrupted. Now, we've seen in the past a particular past chairman of the board disrupt almost every speaker. And right. What was happening during that time was that each person's First Amendment rights were being violated every time they were disrupted. And I vowed not to do that, that every person coming forward is important. I want to hear from each and every person, and you have 3 minutes. Now, my tendency is in the last 5 months is to allow people to speak. They have that right to speak for 3 minutes. And then I typically have not commented on their 3 minute speech. There's been many times where I wanted to, because of false, misleading information, bad language, hand gestures, and a variety of other poor behavior that we've seen from the public, I have refrained from commenting after the fact on many of those. But I think moving forward, I will start to comment more on people's bad behavior. And I think if the public is taken, I think the problem here is that what is constitutional, what is vulgar, what could be said that should be stopped. And there will be times where someone says something, and if they are, in fact, trying to incite violence, that will be stopped. And that's one of the big criterias where you would stop someone. The only time that I have stopped someone from speaking so far is when they're not on topic. if they're talking about something that's totally without the jurisdiction of Shasta County, I will ask them to rein it in. And then also for members of the public that are in our boardroom, the boardroom and whether you're standing up or whether you're sitting down, we want decorum within the boardroom. And when you yell out from the floor, you're now disrupting the meeting, which is now a violation of our policy, and you're interrupting the speaker, so you're really interrupting his First Amendment right or her First Amendment right to speak. So you're doing two things, and I do not like that. Typically, I'll give a warning or two warnings, and literally by the third time of disruption, if it happens in the same meeting, I may ask that you be escorted out of the building. You cannot disrupt the meeting, and yelling out from the floor is just that. It's disrupting the meeting. Unfortunately, for someone using bad language when it's their 3 minutes to speak is not necessarily disrupting the meeting. It is exactly that. It's specific to the words and how they are used. In this last incident, I've had County Council now review the entire tape. They are in agreeance with me and my behavior, how I handled that. I've had other attorneys now weigh in, and they have agreed as well that Mr. Bielecki's First Amendment speech was protected, and that was the right course of action. As heinous and as vile as that word is, he has First Amendment protection.
Well, you're right about the threat. In fact, the only time this really rises to a crime is it's a 403 of the Penal Code when somebody is disrupting the meeting like you just talked about, and the meeting has to be stopped because the disruption is so heinous and the behavior so bad that you have to stop the meeting and call for a recess. Then you could have a misdemeanor, and that person would be in trouble. Now, I know at the last meeting you were interrupted at three times that I can remember, and the third time was really it. You know, let's... I mean, if you're going to – somebody else is speaking. It's not your turn to speak. It's not up to you to speak from the peanut gallery, so to speak.
Well, and also, you know, if you were new, I would probably tolerate a lot more.
Sure.
Because you don't know the rules, and so I would be more, you know, giving on that. But in this particular case, Nathan Pickney is familiar to the boardroom. He's there often, and he knows the rules. He had already left the building and then came back. And
it wasn't there about a 20-minute period of time?
Was a time period where he left.
Yeah.
So the issue at hand was already over, and he came back. And so, you know, I'm not going to give him as much room and latitude because he knows the rules. And in fact, he disrupted the meeting so much that that could be looked at as a criminal act and in disturbing the peace. And he is constantly wanting to make a scene, and he has a history of that. So, but I will treat him the same as I will treat anyone else. We want to have good, respectable meetings, and we want to hear from the public. And when people yell out from the floor, it's disrupting the meeting. It's in violation of our policy. It's a clear violation of our policy, and it's not allowing the speaker to finish what their comments are. So we'll be talking, I'm sure, a little bit more about that on the next meeting. And so at about 12:30, we will take a recess, a pretty hard recess for lunch, and then we'll return at 1 and start our budget hearing. If we still have regular or public comment still yet to go, we will have that following the budget hearing. And the budget hearing may go on for several days or it may not. It just depends on the will of the board.
So there isn't a lot of things happening at the board meeting before public comment, because I know for a lot of people, you know, you go to the parking issue.
Yeah.
And so the way I understand it is you're going to have the employee of the month and will there be any presentations or then right into public comment? How's that going to work?
Yeah, so we just have, I believe, one presentation, which is Employee of the Month, and then it'll go right into public comment.
Great.
So we'll get into that fairly quickly.
Okay. Now, when you do the budget and you go off into that, I know Kevin just did a program and expanded quite a bit on the budget. And I know that you've always thought about, you know, hey, there's a lot of things that we need to be questioning and looking through. What are some of the things about the budget at this point that you think are critical to move one way or another on?
So, you know, one of the concerns to me is that this budget is now $658 million. It's approximately, say, $25 million more than the last year's budget. And then I want to see of that, what is general fund? What is committed monies from grants and various other programs or state mandates? So I want to break that down to see where we're at. I'm not in the habit of just increasing the size of government just simply because of the monies that's there. I want to make sure that we're using that money in a good manner. And again, I want to make sure that we have enough funds to be able to move our jail project forward. And for anybody that's not familiar with the past board and this current board's desire for a new correctional facility, it looks like at this point that it will be built where the current courthouse is right now, which will be demolished probably in less than a year. As the court moves from the old courthouse to the new courthouse, the new $170 million courthouse right there on Court Street across from the admin building, that old courthouse becomes property of Shasta County and most likely will be demolished, and the new jail will go up there. I'm envisioning... and we have a really good architect and consulting firm working with DHL and having around a 300-bed facility right there that works in conjunction with our current jail. And future boards may continue to add more bed space later on. And when you start taking a look at the land that we have, available. There's a little bit more land there. If you could remove that old courthouse, it would be a lot easier to see. We have some parking lots there that are available to us as well that are county owned. And so a jail makes very good sense to build there. And this would be a modern facility with a lot of programming. It's a whole bunch better in design. It's your most current modern design that is safer for the inmates, safer for correctional officers, more efficient, and low labor costs. And that's the key, is keeping those labor costs. And the design of the building is very important there. And so we have that all at our fingertips right now. And we do have to set aside some money to be able to pay for that. And it will be a challenge with this budget, but I do believe the money is there. For me, I want to take a look at the projections as to, with each department, how they take a look and how, what they're projecting. It appears to me that they're always over projecting and always have leftover monies at the end of the year. And so if they're projecting a 10 or 12% excess, I would probably like to get that down to a lower number and be a little bit more realistic as to what their actual needs are. I see that the DA's department is requesting over $2 million, I think $2.5 million more than last year. That's a big number.
Did they have money left over?
I'm not familiar with if they spent everything from last year or not. However, a $2.5 million increase, I'll be looking at that very hard to see if that's justified or not. Obviously, with the sheriff's department, we want to get that third floor filled.
Right.
And in my mind, you know, that's a pretty big issue, is staffing the jail, the current jail that we have. And, you know, the shifts that they work there are 12-hour shifts. And so the way I see it is most of the guys that I have talked to, they like the 12-hour shifts. You get 4 days off 1 week, and then the next week you get three off. And if you stick to that 12-hour shift without much or any overtime, it works pretty well. But when you work these guys with a lot of overtime on those types of shifts, you're going to burn them out quick, and you're going to have a high turnover. And you need to fully staff it. And what you'll find is that the guys will stay for longer periods of time because you get plenty of time off. When you're not getting plenty of time off working in the jail, you're going to have the high turnover, which is what we have. And so I don't think that it's a pay issue necessarily. It's a staffing issue, and we need to start changing our methods as to how we recruit. And again, I'm going to look towards the new CEO and some new methods to try to recruit more so that we get that third floor back open, get those overtime. We're spending millions of dollars in overtime costs there, so we're wasting money there. We need it fully staffed. We need to start getting aggressive on getting more people there, and so I'm excited about having a new CEO. That problem is going to be looked at pretty hard to try to solve it, to get staffing correct so we can get that floor back open. And, you know, when I first read about the floor of one of the floors in the jail being shut down, I read about that in the newspaper. I was not informed from our CEO at the time. I was not informed by the sheriff that we were having a problem. He did not come and approach the board with ways to be able to solve that problem. So I was really, really disappointed in the closing of a floor because it took me by total surprise. And if we would have known 6-8 months before, we could have started some aggressive techniques in recruiting to possibly solve that problem. But we were unaware of that. And we are very aware of it now. And I think some new directions may be headed.
Well, the Sheriff's Department at a board meeting not too long ago had mentioned that it really wasn't a matter of money in keeping people in the jail, keeping them working in the jail, as it was, as you say, the environment and how they needed a better environment in there. And the other thing that I have a question on is with the discretionary spending, can we move some of the money? I'll just use this as an example. I'm not saying this is, but let's say there's money that the DA says they need that they really don't need. But we have it. Could we move some of that money toward the jail? Can we move that discretionary spending around, and how does that work?
Yeah, so when it comes to the general fund, all that money is going to be
around.
It can be moved around. And that is up to the board and to the will of the board as to what they feel is their top priority.
Is that a 4/5 that vote, or is it a regular quorum?
So in a budget hearing that's coming up, once the public hearing starts for that department, once that starts, then it takes a 4/5 vote to make any changes, either spending more or spending less.
Okay.
Before the public hearing, it would need to pass on just a simple majority, 3/5. We'll see how that works out on Tuesday. If there's any concerns, we'll open it up for board consideration before we go to public hearing. We'll talk about each department, and then we'll go to a public hearing. As we open up each department and start discussing it, if a motion is made and it's seconded, then we'll take a vote on it, whatever that issue may be. If a motion is made and a second is not made, obviously it dies for lack of a second, and I'll open up the public hearing and ask for public comment and then bring it back for the board's consideration. So that'll kind of be the process department by department. We did this last year for the first time in a long time, and prior to that, if you remember, they were taking the entire budget and just approving it in one big motion without any discussion, department by department. And it's a huge budget with a lot of moving parts. And I was really uncomfortable with that. I'm not even sure if I voted yes on it or not. I can't remember. But it isn't the way that we should be doing the budget. And for the public's sake, we should be going department by department to see how we're spending that $658
million. This is going to be quite time-consuming, which it probably should be. Do you guys meet on this beforehand? I mean, do you meet as a board beforehand on the budget? Do you study it or sit down together for a couple of weeks?
Yeah,
how does that work?
Yeah, we've had the budget now, and it's a pretty big binder, obviously.
And two hands.
We've been reading it. Each board member has the budget as proposed, and we've been going over it, and I've been making my highlights and my questions. We've also met with the acting CEO and deputy CEO going over the budget and some of the brief headings. And so it was a fairly brief meeting, but I've been going through the budget for quite some time, and I'm still working on last year's budget too, taking a look at that and then comparing it to this year's budget. And I want to make sure that if we have extra funds in a particular area, because I think the general fund, you know, has a growth rate of around 3% currently right now. I want to make sure that we're using the money correctly, and I just have a problem with expanding government if it's not necessary.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that to me is a big issue, and so those are the ways I'm going to look at things. And you know, when you are department head, you're always going to ask for more money. I mean, there's never a time where you're going to say, hey, I've got an extra couple million dollars here. You can take that back. I'm not going to need it. It's very common practice to see every department expand. Now, there are a few departments that are fairly static, but there's a few. But most of the departments seem to be expanding rapidly.
Okay, well, with that, we're going to go off to our break. And if you have a question for Patrick, 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567, and time has come for 51. Let's get it done.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Shout out to Redding Rancheria. Appreciate you guys for all your help. With the help that you guys gave us, we were able to stick around, retain some of our employees, and make sure all the customers got what they needed. Thank you, guys.
Hi there. Us here at the Post Office Saloon would like to thank the Redding Rancheria for supporting us and our community through the COVID pandemic.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
This is Dan Sloan, chair of the Shasta County GOP. I urge Shasta County residents not to sign the petition to recall local Shasta County Supervisor Kevin Cry. A new California law, AB 2582, allows Gavin Newsom to handpick the next supervisor. They want a liberal Democrat. Keep the Sacramento catastrophe out of Shasta County and do not support the recall. To donate or for more information, go to nooncryrecall.com. Paid for by the Committee to Stop Newsom. No on Cry Recall.
Why did you switch to Dish?
Everything was going okay with DirecTV,
but our bill was out of control. We saved
$280. $270.
$300. Like, holy
savings.
Hey guys, this is Doug Tooley with BNT Satellite, your authorized Dish retailer. We've been offering holy savings like these since 1999. Being local, we listen to your needs in the TV entertainment, and we give you the best that we can. At BNT Satellite, we've saved some of our customers $600 to $1,200 per year, and these prices are locked in for 2 years. Skip the 800 number, waiting on hold for long periods of time. Call 241-3474. That's 241-DISH. And if you already have Dish, call us and we'll help you find great ways to upgrade and save money in the years to come.
You're listening to KCNR 96.5 FM at 1460 AM, your talk radio. Online at KCNR1460.com.
Sally Lou, won't back down. Huh, Lori? We're not going to back down.
You go, girls, Sally.
Yeah, and we don't back down, do we?
Mm-mm.
So we were talking about the budget, and there's so many things to go through. Of late, it seems we're not getting a lot of pushback with the jail being downtown. We went through a lot of pushback. That seems to be sort of something where it's sort of crickets over on the other side on that.
Yeah, I mean, it started off, there was some interest in moving it off-site, and I even supported the sheriff taking a look at some possible off-site locations, because I did want to take a look at, is there a particular site that would be well-suited for this? And for whatever reason, a comprehensive look at a variety of different sites really was, to my knowledge, never performed. They seemed to focus in on some property the county owns off of Airport Road, which would be Dump Road Lane. Enterprise Dump Road is what I believe the road was. You really aren't able to build a facility on that. So I'm not sure why we kind of focused in on that. My concerns were transportation costs. They're very expensive. And so there was some look at offsite. So unfortunately, that took quite a few months away from the process, which was unfortunate. The majority of the board agreed that it would be best to do it downtown and as close as you can to the current courthouse, to the new courthouse, which makes sense. And there is a possibility that a tunnel can be done from the new jail facility to the current courthouse, and that can really save some long-term costs. And so we have a consultant right now, an architect and engineering firm, that really are experts in the design of these facilities, and they pretty much have a clean slate right now as to the opportunities and what they can do, and we're going to be hearing from them fairly soon about a proposal. And they are also doing the remodel on courtroom 1 and 2 that is currently located at our current Shasta County Jail, and they're remodeling that. That's not an inexpensive proposition, but we're revamping that to be able to transport inmates from the current jail, put them in a van, and move them across street. So in the interim, we'll have something in place to be able to properly and safely transport inmates to the courthouse, and then return them. So we'll be moving and transporting inmates back and forth pretty much all day long. And so that's what we have in courtroom 1 and 2.
Richard, how are you, my friend? What's up?
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just comment on the budget. You know, I have 25 years. I've worked federal, state, and local government. Saw how the unions work. You know, we need to have a basic economics lesson here. The world and national economy are imploding in front of us. The federal government admits to 15% inflation in the last 2 years. The real inflation has been 40%. Remember, they don't count fuel and food, and that is intentional. The public sector unions, the government employees, they want bigger government and more jobs and expanded programs, but they never, ever talk about true economic indicators. And when we saddle our kids and grandkids with increased debt and increased taxes and spending, that is immoral. Why would we do that? How selfish can we be? How narcissistic can we be to saddle our future generations with debt that at this point probably isn't even able to be paid off, and we want to make it bigger? I think a lesson in hard economic reality is due, and I think at the county level, is it going to hurt? Yeah, it's going to hurt. But you don't blame the current supervisors for doing fiscal responsible actions. You blame the prior people that spent in a very immoral, unethical, and honestly a very not smart way without taking economics into consideration.
Well, it's true, Stones. As we increase, for example, just our labor, when we, you know, we have roughly 2,300 employees, as that grows, so does our CalPERS debt. And we're right now spending approximately $30 million a year out of the general fund to pay down that CalPERS debt. That won't be paid off for probably the next 30 years if everything goes well. And we know over a 30-year period things are not going to go well. And I do believe that we are in for a slowdown, and all of our experts, and it's even in our current budget this year, that a slowdown is most likely coming. And, you know, to compound the problem, we have been giving all of our county employees a 2.5%, 2.5%, 2% raise over the next 3 years. And while it is a meager wage increase, what we're saying, and that is a guaranteed, if those bargaining groups accept those, we have to do those pay raises in year 2 and 3 from now, and some uncertainty whether our general fund is going to grow or shrink. And to me, this feels a lot like 2006, 2007, where the economy had been fine. We are hearing some rumblings off in the distance, and yet if we don't make some changes, at the end of the day, if the general fund starts to drop, employees have to get, you know, fired, and that's the last thing you want to do. And so
it is. And I'm sorry, there's a slight delay on the cell phone, but you know, the 03 tech crash, the 07, 08 housing crash, and the soon-to-be second housing crash, part two, those were mostly limited to those sectors with the ancillary connected economy. But right now we're in a worldwide economic collapse, all sectors. And we're in unprecedented times. And that means we have to take unprecedented actions. The crash is in front of us. It's happening. We have to minimize the crash and be prepared to come out of the crash in a smart, economical manner. But, hey, last thing before I go. There's a reason governments don't hire economists. Yeah? Okay. Have a good night, everybody.
Exactly. Thank you, brother. He makes a really good point, and this is really – there is such a drastic difference. We've been talking about a certain initiative that we'd like to present to the state of California, and several of us were talking about that. And the cost of doing anything right now is so insane. In 2020, the average price for a gallon of gas in the state of California was $2.81. Today, not even 3 years later, it's $4.62. So when you start looking at what's going on, and what about eggs? I mean, look at the price of eggs, the price of milk, the price of food. Everything's gone up, and Richard's right. You know, there is a worldwide, I don't know whether it's a depression yet or not, but I certainly don't see it getting any better. When we give raises like to Kathy Darling Allen of $40,000+, and these people in the county are all making gobs of money, you know, really and truly, and I'm not talking about the rank and file, but the upper management. And I know that there's been a lot of us out there as citizens have angst over this, because everybody kind of has to kind of help out here, you know, and it doesn't seem like the unions in a lot of cases are willing to help out as much as they should. And
Terry, and I'll tell you a little story. Okay. You know, starting around 2007, when I was on Reading City Council, and our public safety, mainly our police department, they had averaged a 4.85% raise for a 30-year straight period prior.
Wow.
And as long as the money was there, and the general fund was increasing by that amount, they literally got their whole career, literally a 5% raise, every year that they worked. The problem is when we hit 2007 and 8, the general fund money started to drop quickly. And, the problem is the union still wanted the 5%
right.
raise
right.
when our general fund is dropping. And, you know, it's a give and take. You know, when we have the money, we gave it. And then when we don't have the money, we can't give it. And in times when you're really short, you're going to need some money back. And that is hard for the unions. And I've noticed here lately, in the last, you know, two decades here in Shasta County, that's not being looked at by some of the unions, that they always look at what they should get. Well, in a perfect world, that would be great, what everybody should get, but you have to take a look at what's happening in the economy. And we're seeing some huge roller coaster rides with regards to the economy and what happens in the general fund. And it is if the unions do not take that into consideration. I find it frustrating and difficult to deal with. And I've been heavily criticized for taking on public safety in the past. But I didn't have the money to do it. I have a hard time making a promise that I can't keep.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's something that just is reality. I mean, I don't know what, I know that in looking at Transparent California, when you can look at that and you look at the different salaries that people get, the upper management in Health and Human Services is a perfect example. The upper management in that makes 3-4 times what the rank and file make.
Well, you know, and I take a look recently as when Matt Pontus resigned and the decision was made to put Pat Minturn in there until we could, find a new CEO, which as of now we have a new
right.
CEO, and I'm excited because he is a numbers guy, and I think that's really going to help us right now. But literally for Pat Minturn, acting CEO, once at 6 months, exactly at that time, it was able to spike his salary. And we still needed him to stay on for a few more months so we could find our, CEO, because we were recruiting at that time. So do you think he would stay on and help out for a few extra months No, he leaves immediately. And, and when we have to go to a second acting CEO.
Right.
And I just assumed that, you know, he'd been with the county for, you know, 27, 28 years. And what's a few more months? Why don't you hang on, stay around, help the county out until you find your next permanent CEO. We're recruiting. We got a lot of, you know, we had 40 people put in for that. So we had a lot of good, people, and then started going through the selection process. But the literally the day that he got full retirement, and a spike to boot, he was gone. That really doesn't show well for him and for the agency as well. And I'd like to, you know, change that. The opportunity that we have right now with a new CEO coming on, new board members, is that I believe a culture change is slowly happening with Shasta County. I'm excited about that. We want to be open. We want to be transparent. We want to spend public funds, you know, the best way that we can. And I'm excited that we have this opportunity. They don't come around. At the same time, I'm very concerned with the economy moving forward. I've been through this before. We were through, you know, the global recession. You know, I was in office during that whole time. In fact, my 8 years that I served was pretty much from the start through the finish of the global recession. And while it was no fun at the time, it has prepared me if we have to move into that type of situation moving forward, and we can make those tough decisions, and I think we have a board appropriate that can make those decisions. On the other hand, you know, for me personally, while I take the pay for the county, I've turned down all retirement. I don't take CalPERS. I've turned that down. I turned it down at the city as well, and I've turned it down at the county, and it's not that I didn't want the retirement, and I'm certainly not asking our employees to do that, but because of the debt associated with it, the long-term debt, I didn't want to be a part of it. And Supervisor Kellstrom has also turned down the retirement. So I thank him for doing that as well. What that shows is someone ready to serve. And, you know, we've approved term limits now. That'll go to the voters here in the upcoming presidential election. And I'm excited about that. That might change who wants to run for the board in the future. Do your two terms and return back to the private sector. Have a sense of urgency and do your homework. You know, I went to 4 years worth of council meetings before I was elected, and those were good years. And I read 12 years worth of staff reports, and I went to 12 years worth of city council meetings. I never missed a single meeting. And you know, to try to learn as much as you possibly can to make the best decisions that you can. And sometimes they're tough decisions, and you take criticism. And I'll take more criticism, but I'll continue to make tough decisions.
You know, there's a lot of people that are against term limits, but they use the example of Congress, of the Senate, and of the House of Representatives or State Assembly, State Senate. But the decisions that are made on the state level are lengthier and a different impact than what you make on a county level. I mean, county level, there is no reason for somebody to serve 20 years on a county level. Most of the decisions you're going to make are going to be made quickly. The budgets are going to be approved. You're going to make these decisions, and these things will go on a smaller time scale than you would as far as an office with the state or
Well, one of the things I've seen when you have long-term board of supervisors is they almost become the bureaucrat themselves.
Very much so.
Instead of a representative of the people. And by setting two terms, there's a sense of urgency to make people's lives better and to make government more efficient, in my mind. And, you know, and I think that's why this new board was elected. They worked hard, and I think people appreciated their stances on some of these issues. So, you know, it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I just saw skinny Mark Kent coming in here. He's looking pretty healthy. Anyway, yeah, it seems to me as if we have a lot of changes that are coming forward. And talking about that, I mean, there's different positions that people hold on the recall. To me, I see it being really bizarre that a guy who's been in 5 months, apparently everything that's wrong with the county is wrong with Kevin Cry. And it's... Nathan Pinckney made a remark at the Board of Supervisors, and the remark he made was that, Patrick, we know we can't get you. Chris, we know we can't get you, but we think we can get Kevin. So what does that really mean? Get Kevin out of the way for Mr. Newsom?
Well, you know, it is their constitutional right here in California to have a recall. So if they can muster enough energy and effort to gather those signatures, well, then more power to them. So that is their right to do so. But then it becomes up to the public as to whether Kevin Christ stays in office or not. I believe he'll stay in office. I think he's done a very good job so far. And they've said it fairly clearly. They do not like a conservative majority board that we have today, and they want to change it. They want to put a liberal Democrat in Kevin's place to change. And not only what they would do is they would reverse the decision on electronic voting machines. They would reverse many decisions that we have done that are in a more conservative manner. And that's all that this is. This is a chance for them to be able to try to change the majority of the board. And they are correct. If you're going to do a recall, District 1 is easier to do it there. But it has nothing to do with the job that Supervisor Cry has done. He has done most of the things that he has promised to do when he was running. And it's what got him in that seat. And so for the people that are gathering signatures, there's obviously been successful recalls here in Shasta County, but you've got a lot of work ahead of you, and we'll see at the end of the day if you can get it done.
Oh, we have a caller on the line. Bruce, what say you?
Oh, yeah, just a couple quick questions. I know you're working on having a town hall for elections and the Dominion machines, et cetera. Is there a date for that set up yet?
Yeah, so there's a tentative date, Bruce. It looks like July 19th or 20th, so right in there. It's going to be either Wednesday or Thursday of that week. I will confirm shortly. Looks like we're having Jeff O'Donnell there from his analytics company going over the Mesa pattern of fraud. It looks like we'll probably have several other top experts in the country there.
Linda Rance has expressed she wants to come out.
Yeah, and I believe Linda will be there.
And
she has created the return to hand counting for Missouri, and it's a manual, and I've talked to her already. And then we're trying to set that up at Simpson University, and so we're fleshing out all the final details, but it is going to be in that week of July. And I'm looking forward to it because the media isn't putting out any other information. And the fact of the matter is, when you get down to it, is there fraud or is there not? And I want to start showing the public that we have had some problems.
Oh, yeah.
And it's finally time that the public starts seeing that you have not had fair elections for a long time. And I think this is widespread. I think this goes across every state in the union. And I'm glad that Shasta County is leading the way. And that's also one of the other reasons why they're attempting to recall Kevin Cry, is they want to try to shut this down, and they want to try to silence the truth.
Yeah, it's obvious they don't like Shasta County, and the truth is being hidden from the people, a lot of the people, unfortunately. And this should be a great event. I'm looking forward to it.
I appreciate it. We'll get you more information as it comes around.
One other quick question?
Sure.
The thing with Mr. Bielecki, and you can't believe the local media, but some of the articles, or one of them that came out, implied that the sheriff wanted to arrest Mr. Bielecki but decided not to because they were afraid of violence. Is that really true, or is that a lie? That seems like a lawsuit right there.
Well, so I don't. The sheriff did not consult with me, nor does he have to in these matters. I suspect a complaint came before him. He has moved that complaint over to the DA for disturbing the peace, and I find that a little bit interesting in that Mr. Bielecki was protected by the First Amendment. So how could you be disturbing the peace if your speech was protected by the First Amendment?
And he didn't threaten anybody.
So that's going to be a
threat.
There was no violence. There was no. Other than Mr. Pinckney being rude, there was no anything else other than people being upset.
But if the DA picks this up, it'll be much like the Carlos Zapata splashgate. I don't think it'll set well for the DA, but that's up to her.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of, because we know her her beliefs, and it's not good. So anyway, I thank you for everything you do.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. So you know this this whole issue, when we go to the recall and we talk about that and the different reasons why these people want to do it, I went by one of their little booths and I asked, well, why is it that you want to recall Kevin Cry? And one of the people actually told me he ran as a fiscal conservative. And I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And I kind of just looked at her like, okay, so what does that mean? He wants to save your money? Is that what you're saying? That he doesn't want to spend your money needlessly? Is that what you're saying?
Well, Terry, and, you know, they were pretty honest about, at the start of this, why they wanted to do it. They just want control of the board.
Absolutely.
You know, and so it isn't specific issues about really what Kevin has done. It's just they don't like a conservative board. And
Shasta County, can you believe it?
Yeah. And, but they are lying. They're saying Kevin is a fake and things like this. Supervisor Cry is a fake, and he's not a fake. He's a conservative. Just be honest about it. You don't like conservative values and ideas, and you would like to return it to the Leonard Modi, Joe Chimenti, Mary Rickard type of board. And, you know, they should just be honest with it. And ultimately, because they're not being honest about what they're doing, it's going to hurt their successes. And people are not dumb. They will figure it out. They can also remove their signature if they have signed. Once they find out that they have been lied to, there's a process for that. And so it'll all come around. And I did want to announce that, you know, last night I was pretty hungry. I was hungry. And so I decided to go to Whiskey Barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Whiskey Town Barbecue.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, you know, off of Eureka Way in Buenaventura. And quite a few of my friends were there. And new friends popped up. And old friends were already there. And we had a great meal. We had a good time and supported a good local business. And so that was a lot of fun. I think we'll be going back on a regular basis.
Yeah, I heard the place is good.
It's really good.
And yeah, a lot of fun.
Brisket sandwich was quite good.
Okay, cool. You know, I think that as we move into this next period of our economy, I think that we do have the right leaders in place. And the idea of being fiscally conservative right now is good for everybody. I don't care what party you belong to or which side of the aisle you're on. I mean, really and truly, as we see prices escalate, we all need to sort of, if you want to say it this way, we sort of need to do our fair share. And that is, you know, do you ask for huge amounts of money or huge raises, or do you ask for those kinds of things right now from the people of Shasta County? I mean, is that something that you can live with? And I mean, that's a question that I think that the people who are wanting more money in the county need to ask themselves.
Well, you know, Terry, we have, you know, like I say, we have over 2,000 county employees, and actually, when you take in consideration in home support care people, that can number go up to 3,000 to 4,000 employees, and we have really good employees, we have good people, and it's not that we don't want to pay more money, we want to pay everybody as much as what we can afford that isn't going to cause problems and cause us to be able to have to lay people off if we get into a recession. And labor is a big issue, obviously, in Shasta County, but it's not the only issue as well. We have some priorities that we want as well. There are some buildings that we want to build. There are some things that we want to accomplish at the same time. And all county employees are going to be getting a raise, and it has to be something similar. And so that's what we're attempting to do.
You know, I think moving forward, folks, we need to get this county on track. We need to get the jail built. We need to make sure that we are fiscally conservative. And I certainly thank you, Patrick, for the hard work you've done. And Lori, I mean, you know, you've been amazing. I mean, talk about the rock behind the stone.
yeah, my wife has worked really hard. We don't sit back. You know, this is our county. We're going to stay here our whole lives. And so issues and things that are important for us, we've worked hard at it, and Lori's worked extremely hard, and lucky to have her.
Thanks.
Anyway, folks, we're coming to the end of our time here. Stay tuned for Sovereign Minds with Mark and Linda Kent. The time has come for 51, so let's get it done.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? It's not our bill. We had no say. You don't serve us. You serve LA. The time has come for 51.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.